name is Mud. You're listening to the Ryan Mud Show at the intersection of where faith and sports collide. Get ready for an exciting hour-long journey into faith stories and sports right here in Nashville. The Ryan Mud Show. Slinging it to you every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. only on WNSR 560 a.m. or 95.9 FM. And remember, his name is Mud.
Welcome into the huddle at the intersection of faith and sports here on the Ryan Mud Show. We have a special guest with us, David Krill out of Houston, Texas. He is a Zig Ziglar coach. And let's welcome in David. David, how are you?
I am blessed and highly favored. How about yourself?
Doing well, doing well. All right, since it's a faith and sports show, talk to me about your background in sports and, you know, where that all started and your love for sports in general, because I know you love Liverpool, Dallas Cowboys, Houston Astros. Who else? Tell me kind of your background.
Well, I had a ball in my hand basically since I was able to hold things. My mom would always have she'd always have a ball or a Hot Wheels car in her purse when I was growing up, and I do not remember this, but what she tells me was when I was old enough to, you know, talk, you know, three or four, whatever, we were at a restaurant, and apparently the waiter was pretty rude to my mom, and my mom said I had a ball in my hand, because I always had a ball in my hand, and I dotted him in the back whenever he walked away, so they had to apologize for that. But yeah, I played baseball growing up, I played basketball, I played racquetball, I picked up golf when I was 16. I played slow pitch softball, anything with I played ping pong, you know, anything really with really hand-eye coordination. I've basically been playing since I was able to.
Okay. What's your favorite sport?
My favorite sport to play is golf.
Okay.
My favorite sport to watch is either college football or the Liverpool in the Premier League.
Okay. Yeah. Now tell me how the Liverpool came about. Like how did that? Because I for some reason I cannot get into soccer. I can't get into the diving of the players.
I get it. And I was the exact same way.
Okay.
From the moment I was born until 2013, I was like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. They don't score enough, you know, whatever. Well, my brother, before the World Cup, I think in 2014, my brother said, I don't know why, but I'm excited to watch the World Cup. And I said, well, I don't know why either, but I'm also excited. Now, I would watch the World Cup final because it was the World Cup final, but I didn't know what was going on, any of the rules. And but all of a sudden, the World Cup, I want America, you know, I want us to win. You know, I don't really care who we're playing. I want us to win, which we don't very often. The women do, but the men don't. Anyways, after the World Cup, I was like, okay, I learned some of the rules. Especially the offside rule, which made it where I could understand a little bit more. But I went to Twitter, or X, Twitter when I went back to it, and I literally put out a tweet, and I put, hey, I live in Texas. I'm looking for a non-American soccer team to follow. Make your case. I'm a free agent. I'm looking to support someone.
I love it.
And literally, like, I probably got 30 or 40 replies to that message, and 38 of them were Liverpool.
Okay.
And I did a little research, and I said, okay, yeah. So that's how I grow to now support and follow Liverpool. That's how it happened. from our friends at Twitter or X.
So you think I should do that for the pick my next team for soccer?
Well, you could, or you could just go with Liverpool.
Okay.
I'll save you all the trouble. Just go with Liverpool.
Okay. Now, where did the love for the Dallas Cowboys come from?
My dad is and was a Cowboys fan, and I started liking the Cowboys on the first play of the season in 1992. Emmitt Smith and the Cowboys were playing the Giants. I believe it was at Meadowlands, which is the Giants old stadium. The very first play from scrimmage, Emmitt Smith took it about 60 or 70 yards and either scored or got down to the 2 or 3 yard line and almost scored. And since that play, I've been with them.
So how has it been as a fan since the heyday of Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin, Troy Aikman? It's got to be nerve-wracking to be a fan, if you ask me.
Well, it's not nerve-wracking. It's terrible. The Cowboys haven't even been to the conference championship since, like, 1996 or 1995, 1996. So, in my opinion, the owner needs to hire a GM because every other sports team in the world has a GM except, like, maybe one or two others, and those people aren't doing very well either. And the last time he had a general manager, which was Jimmy Johnson, Cowboys did okay for themselves. But it's hard to kick the owner out. So the owner is who the owner is, and we'll just keep trading generational talents for older players and draft picks and picking poorly. So there we go.
So do you think the Dallas Cowboys need a defensive lineman? Do they need defensive line help?
Well, they need defensive line help. They need linebacker help. They need corners to stay healthy. They need safety help because if you haven't noticed, they have like a top two or three or four offense in the whole league and a bottom two or three defense.
We can trade you a defensive lineman to the Cowboys if they'll give a first round pick. We'll trade you Jeffrey Simmons for the Titans if Jerry will pull the trigger and give us a first round pick.
That's above my pay grade, but get somebody on your station to call him and see if he's open to it.
Now, where did the love for the Houston Astros come from?
Minute Maid, well, it used to be the Astrodome, is 20 minutes from my house. So that's like the closest team. The Texans are Oilers/Texans were there too, but I've loved baseball since I was three or four, and it just came from, you know, it's kind of like my hometown team. And funny story, years ago when the Astros played in the Astrodome, me and my friend actually got the wave started. And the wave, you know, like the wave, like, ooh, you know, where it goes the stadium. Me and him got that started. We were in the top deck, and we got it started, and it lasted for almost 15 minutes. Like, it just kept going and going and going. And years ago, I saw with my own eyes Mike Scott throw a no-hitter to clinch a playoff spot. I was in the building for a no-hitter. And whenever Chris Burke and Roger Clemens and Andy Pettit pitched for the Astros, I think back in 2004, 2005, the 18-inning game where Chris Burke hit the walk-off home run, I think against the Braves, I was at that game too.
Now, do you have a basketball team?
No, I don't really. I don't really pay attention to the NBA.
What about college?
I like Duke.
Okay.
I don't follow them as much as I did in the past. But if I'm riding a horse, Duke's my team.
Now Flag just went to the pros. But they get five-star talent every year. I love watching Duke during the March Madness. I love getting behind them because they are always there at the end, if you ask me.
Yeah, more often than not, they're at least going to be on the short list of – maybe they're not going to win, but they're on the short list of, hey – like, they've got the talent where they can win every year. Obviously, they don't. But they're always on the short list of, yeah, they've been really, really good for a couple of decades. So, they're always on the short list of possible national champions.
Now, you said golf is your favorite sport to play. Are there any memorable courses that you played at?
Yeah, I've played at Trump Doral in Miami, which was incredible. It was very, very nice. I've played a course, I think in Jamaica, called White Witch, and it was awesome. One of my favorite courses I've ever played was I think it was in one of the U.S. Virgin Islands, Royal St. Kitts, the par three they had there. It was like a postcard, and it was the prettiest hole I've ever seen. I played in Hawaii, I've played. I've never gone overseas to play. I've only played in Mexico and the Caribbean, and you know, around Texas. But I've never really gone on a golf vacation other than. One time we did go to Trump Doral in Miami, and it was awesome.
So is it kind of a pipe dream to play in Scotland?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A pipe dream, which isn't possible, but, well, I'd have to be over there for a while. But if I could just wave a magic wand and it would happen, I would book a trip over there to go watch – the final round of the British Open or the Open Championship at St. Andrews. I'd be there for all the tournament. Then I would play the British Open rotation of courses, some of which you can't get on, but if I'm waving a magic wand, I would get on them. I would play all 9 or 10 or 11 or 12 of the courses that are in the rotation for the British Open. And then I would go to Anfield and watch Liverpool absolutely batter Manchester United 7-0. And then I would fly back home.
All right. This segment is brought to you by Jessica Nider Real Estate. You can contact her at 615-521-5944. Again, 615-521-5944. Over to you, Luther.
Thank you, good sir. When did you decide that being a coach to help people would be your life's work?
That's a great question. I was on a webinar in a previous life. I was the lab tech testing petrochemicals. And I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew it wasn't going to be that for the rest of my life.
Sure.
And through various things, I started a pressure washing company back in 2015, which I still own and operate. And December of 2019, Tom Ziegler, who's Zig Ziegler's son, who runs the Ziegler Corporation now, I was on a webinar with him and a few other people, and Tom was introducing the Ziegler Choose to Win coaching program. And 5 minutes into that webinar, I realized basically what I'd been doing my whole life was coaching people. I just didn't know what it was called. So Les Brown said, a job is what you're paid for, and a calling is what you're made for. And the short answer to that is coaching is my calling in life, and it's what I will be doing until the good Lord takes me home.
Les Brown is not a bad figure to model, if I do say so myself. Did you ever get a chance to meet the late Zig Ziglar?
I did not, unfortunately. I was a little late to the game hearing about him. I'm very good friends with his son, but I never got the chance to meet Zig. I did see Les Brown speak. I never met the man, but I did see Les Brown speak from stage before, which was awesome. But no, unfortunately, I never got to meet Zig.
And I'll put it this way: Duke is not a bad team to, you know, put your money on if you were betting, because Duke looks like they're loaded again for another run at the NCAA tournament. And I think Mike Krzyzewski, who I have seen when he was at Lipscomb once, it's been a while, but I did listen to him on stage that night, and he's a pretty awesome speaker in his own right. That Coach Shire was, you know, Krzyzewski's coach in waiting for when he finally called it, he was ready to go. Because he learned under him, and he also played as his point guard. So he knows what the Duke brand is, which doesn't really hurt.
Yeah, it never does, at least in that case.
Yeah, look at the University of Tennessee. It took them how many coaches on the women's side after Pat Summitt passed away, and they tried Holly Warlick and then Kelly Jolly, and now they've got their current head coach right now. We'll see how long that one goes. But I think they finally have a coach on the women's side that can actually get them back to prominence. But it's hard, but as the old adage goes, it's hard to replace a legend.
Yes, but not impossible.
No, not impossible, but you got to make sure you have the right coach that is willing to take on that responsibility. And sadly, a lot of people want the label and title, but don't want to do the responsibilities that it takes to actually succeed.
Correct.
So as a coach, if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, these are the things I want to do, like, what are your biggest key questions that you are going to ask as a coach to make sure that if they're ready for the responsibility, they can take it on head on? Or do you have an idea when you talk to people whether they are truly ready and if their heart is in the right place or not?
Great question. Let me take the first question first. The answer is, nothing significant ever happens outside of a conversation.
Correct.
So I need to be able to talk to them. Half the battle of knowing where you want to be, and most people skip this step, is you have to know where you're starting from to know where you want to go.
Sure.
You know, y'all all live in Tennessee. I live in the Houston area. If I need to come up to and visit y'all, I need to go kind of northeast a little bit. But if I don't know I'm starting in Houston and I'm actually in New York City, I could get to you going northeast, but it'd be a whole lot easier if I went southwest. So some of the questions I would ask up front is, what are you currently doing? You know, what have you tried? Because we're trying to establish where you're starting from. Like, X marks a spot on a map. Because if you don't know where you're starting from, it's very difficult to know where you want to go. Yeah, exactly. Like, imagine going to, you know, the Nashville airport, and you say, I want to get on a plane. I want to go somewhere. Okay, perfect. Where do you want to go? I don't know. I just want to go on wherever plane that's going. You know, wherever that plane's going, get me on that plane. That's not going to really work out for you.
No, because you have to have an idea of what destination you want to go to and where you're starting from.
Exactly. But you can't know where you want to go if you don't know where you're starting from.
Bingo.
You know, like Dr. Seuss said, I think it was Dr. Seuss or it was Alice in Wonderland or something. He said, if you don't know where you're going, any direction will do.
But sometimes any direction won't do, because if you're trying to get to where you really want to go, like I always have told people before, what steps are you willing to take to actually get to where you want to go? You may have to change course.
Right. So that brings to the second question you asked. Generally, I might, like say after we have our first call,
right,
I might give someone a little homework assignment to see if they're willing to do the work. Because as a coach, or at least the way I view it, is I'm not going to tell
Charlie,
you what
can
to
you
do.
Me, please?
I'm going to ask you questions where you come up with your own idea. And then you have to do the work, because you can't hire anyone to do your push-ups for you, unfortunately.
I love how you start off the conversation, though. How can I help you? Like, if you don't know what kind of help you want, then we can't get the conversation going. That's the key. I love how you always start that question off.
Yeah, it's, you know, well, if you look at the Bible, you know, multiple people came up and said, you know, say the blind man. Blind man says, you know, Jesus walks to the blind man and says, what do you want? Do you want to be healed? And the fact of the matter is, some people don't want to be healed. Some people want to have a pity party, and they just want to play victim for their whole life. And, you know, those people don't hang around me very long, because I'm not going to put up with it.
What do we call those type of people?
Victims?
Victims, excuse makers, what else?
Having a pity party for themselves?
Yeah.
You know, and as Zig Ziglar said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with having a pity party. However, the only problem is a lot of people don't come to the party, and those that do don't bring any presents.
I agree. That's so true. Now, how can people get a hold of you if they need you as a coach?
Well, the fact of the matter is, no one needs a coach. We're all born with greatness. We're all smart people. We can figure it out given enough time. However, some people might want a coach. But let me be clear, no one needs a coach.
Right.
But some people may want a coach. So the easiest way is davidcreel.com, my website. If you can't find a way to get a hold of me off that, you know, I don't know what to tell you. It's got my YouTube channel. It's got my podcast. It's got my phone number. It's got my email. It's got Facebook and LinkedIn. It's got all the links where you can get a hold of me.
Now, spell your last name for people who don't know how to spell your last name.
DavidCreel.com.
Sounds good.
And one more question on my end. When you said people, you know, don't need a coach, but how do you tell after your first conversation when a person is, because in your QVQ that you put out on Tuesdays, and thank you for letting me subscribe to that, by the way, in your QVQs, you put a great coach, a great quote from the originator of general managers and head coaches in Tom Landry. And for those that don't know what that quote means, for those that don't get the QVQ, A, how can people subscribe to that? And B, can you please, for our listening audience, break that Tom Landry quote down? Because I posted it last week on my timeline when Ryan sent it out to sent me the QVQ, and it was in there.
Yeah. Okay. So, boys and girls at home, if you don't know who Tom Landry is, Google him. Okay, you're missing out if you don't know who Tom Landry is. The quote says, or the quotation, it says, "A coach is someone who tells you what you don't want to hear, who has you see what you don't want to see, so you can be who you have always known you could be." So this is kind of a vague answer, but it is the answer. It's you know when you know. Yeah. When you know you're at the point where you're tired of banging your head against the wall and trying a lot of things that don't work, it might be easier if you have someone who, A, is a source of encouragement and information for you, and B, who has your back and who believes in you. Sometimes the only thing that's missing is sometimes you don't believe in yourself, but sometimes you can take someone else's belief in you until you begin to believe it for yourself.
That is so true. That sometimes people have to come into your life to see the blind spots for you to go forward where you want to go in life. All right, last question. Since it's a faith-based show, what scripture is speaking to you right now, and kind of share what's speaking into your life right now? I know you're reading Sermon on the Mount, right?
I'm in the Gospels now, but yeah, one that just spoke to me, I literally just had this conversation 10 minutes ago before this call, Mark 9, the story of Jesus heals a demon-possessed boy, Mark 9, 14 through 29 is the story. But basically, a guy comes up to Jesus and says, you know, "I need help, my son's possessed," and, you know, he throws him in the fire and he calls him to have convulsions and stuff. And then in verse 21, "How long has this been happening?" Jesus asked the boy's father. He replied, "Since he was a little boy. The spirit often throws him into the fire or into water, trying to kill him. Have mercy on us and help us if you can." And this verse right here is the one that really stuck out to me. Verse 23, this is Jesus speaking. "What do you mean, if I can?" Jesus asked. "Anything is possible if a person believes."
That's good. That's good.
That if I can, of course he can. He owns this whole planet.
Yes, he does.
He can do whatever he wants to do because he's in control and we're not.
Amen.
I love the quote that you put yesterday in your QVQ, where it said, where you eloquently put it of, don't have your concert first, don't tune your instruments later. Start your day with prayer and the Word of God and be in harmony, basically in lockstep with Him. For those that don't understand it, can you please, in the Cliff Notes version with about 20 seconds left before we close this out, can you please break that down for the people in the back that didn't understand what you posted with that quote in yesterday's QVQ?
Follow God, get in step with Him, and everything takes care of itself.
That's good. That's good. All right, thanks for coming on today, David. We appreciate it.
Awesome. This was fun, boys. Have a great one.
All right, thank you. All right, this segment is brought to you by Brentwood Baptist Church. They're located on 777 Concord Road, Brentwood, Tennessee, 37027. Also, neverthirst.org, where they bring clean water and the gospel at the same time. And FCA.org. Donate to the local chapter in your area. Northern Middle Tennessee and Southeast Middle Tennessee are the two chapters that I donate to. So donate to both those chapters. We'll be back right after this. Let's get to the roundtable talk with Crazy Charlie and Luther King. All right, guys, big news this week. Brian Callahan is out as head coach of the Titans. It was something that was coming. I mean, we could feel it from an organization standpoint. So let's talk about going forward. Do we need an offensive coach or a defensive coach? Luther.
An experienced offensive head coach that can not look like a pathetic bonehead when it comes to developing the number one overall pick in the National Football League. Cam Ward was the number one pick for a reason. And you already had a obstinate dimwit as a head coach who already had one hand tied behind his back. I'm just going to be point-blank blunt about it. This all traces back to John Robinson getting ousted when the Titans were in first place in the AFC South, and then they went on that losing skid, and they never recovered after that. Then they put in a guy that really wasn't ready in Rand Carthon. And I think this has basically spiraled out of control to the point now that Chad Brinker is now the president of football operations. I don't even think he should even have been president of football operations, to be honest with you. I think there should have been a whole re-cleanse and a do-over. But unfortunately, when you are a dysfunctional team doing dysfunctional things, this all starts at the top. Who is a absentee landlord of her own football team right now? And Amy Adams Strong is not based here. She's in Houston, Texas, kind of like what Stephen Ross is with the Miami Dolphins. You're not getting rid of the owner. And I think they have to be willing to go find a guy that is offensive-minded and can also be a QB and understand the strengths and weaknesses of what Cam Ward can and cannot do. I think that's what it's going to come down to. Is Borgonzi and Brinker going to actually collaborate and come up with the right formula to succeed for the next head coach that will get the best out of Cameron Ward at starter? It's that simple.
So, Charlie, do they go with a retread or do they go offensive coordinator route, defensive coordinator route? You know,
before I say where I think they're going to go, I'm going to say where I would like them to go.
Okay.
I want a leader. I don't care what your background is. I don't care if your background's on defense, your background's offense, your background is special teams. I want a man on the sidelines that can lead men into battle in the trenches every single Sunday. The results may not always work out in favor of the team, but I want them to walk away. I left everything on the field. We left it out there on the field. And that's what I want from the next head coach of the Titans. I want the opposite of Brian Callahan. Brian Callahan seems like a very nice guy. Didn't get to know him very well because he's just another head coach that got fired by the Titans. He seemed like a nice guy. His press conferences, he was polite. He was respectful. But is that what the team needs? Is that what a young team that has nothing in the cupboard needs at this moment in time? They need a leader of men Who is that? Who's available? I'm not 100% sure. What are they going to do? They're going to hire a retread. They're going to hire somebody who has years of experience. The more they can get, the better, because they're going to overreact and pull a 180, and they're going to say, we hired the new, young, hot offensive guru this last time around, and it blew up in our faces, and it backfired, and now we need a head coach who's been there and done that before and who can get us backwards. Is it the right decision? I don't know. Probably not. But they're going to go with a retread. They're going to go with an experienced head coach, and you're going to hear names like Arthur Smith and Jim Schwartz. Because of their previous ties with the organization, they're going to come up immediately. And Luther's already said it. Mike McCarthy, it gets somewhat more obvious, I think, on a day-to-day basis that Mike McCarthy might be the leading candidate. But I defer to Luther's expertise on this because he's the coach killer in the room. He's the one that last Sunday said, the Callahans are gone. And here we are on the next episode, and the Callahans are gone.
Out.
Luther is still sitting here.
Look, here's what did I tell you last Sunday after we beat Arizona? I said, if Brian Callahan wants to stay here, what did I say? They had to go down to Vegas, let Geno be the one to make the mistakes and give you the ball. And you only got one turnover out of that. You didn't do anything with it. But that is what typically shows with a football team that is basically young and very inexperienced. And it basically reared its ugly head again on Sunday. Good teams know how to find a way to take advantage of it. The only team right now that is relatively worse than us... Are the Jets.
Now,
I'm just going to be honest with you, guys. I don't think we're done with the coaches firing yet. I mean, I think McDaniel for the Dolphins is gone. I think Chris Greer, the Dolphins, is GM. His tenure is done. And I hate to say this, but with Woody Johnson being the Jerry Jones of the AFC East, I wouldn't be shocked if Aaron Glenn is gone after one and done. I would not be.
Now, let me give you one name for the Titans. This name will come up. I believe it will. Matt Nagy.
Matt Nagy, probably, let me put it this way with Matt Nagy, okay? Matt Nagy needs to stay in his lane as an OC. If he gets a second chance, I just don't see him ever getting another head coach gig after his disaster with Mitchell Trubisky and the Chicago Bears. I don't see him shredding that label to get another chance. Look, I hope he does get another shot. I hope he gets another shot. But do I see it with us? No. But there will be jobs available if he's in the hunt for another head coach job.
The only reason I say that is the connection with Borgonzi and the Chiefs. That's the only reason.
I doubt it. I mean... With Brinker being the Packers guy and Borgonzi being a figurehead as GM, even though he's out there with Brinker, I don't know if they're going to actually be willing to collaborate with each other and put each of the differences aside of the teams that they've come from before. That's just me. I don't see Nagy. I mean, he'll get an interview, but I just don't see him getting, you know, another opportunity. Now, another name that I can think of possibly, if you want to go outside the box, maybe Chip Kelly. But I think Chip Kelly may need to go back to college because I don't think he's, you know, proven himself to be worthy in the league. I just don't, because he's already, you know, butting heads with Pete Carroll already in Vegas. But all again, right. That's just me.
All right, let's pivot to Preds talk, because the Preds have a huge opportunity to get butts in seats, mm-hmm, with a great start of the season so far. They have a great opportunity to basically take advantage of the Titans' lost opportunity with the fans and the road fans coming to the stadium, Nissan Stadium. So the Preds can say, hey, we have something to offer here. We're putting a good product on, mm-hmm, the ice.
Well,
talk about that, Charlie.
Well, typically, you have to wait till Thanksgiving to get that. Excuse me. Yeah, typically you got to wait till Thanksgiving to get that post-Titans bump for the attendance for the Predators. But with the Titans being as awful as they've been so far this season, people have already clearly checked out. I say that because we see it across the board here at the radio station. Calls about the topic of the Titans are dropping week to week. Texts, tweets, everything about the Titans. It's fading off. With the coaching change, with the interim coach, that may re-engage some people. But this does, as you just set up very perfectly, allow the Predators to open that door a little bit earlier. Now, they're on a long road trip to Canada at this moment that we're speaking. First road trip of the year. And by the way, through one road game, the first road game of that road trip, the Predators equaled 10% of last year's total road wins. So that's just one indicator, just one, that shows you they're off to a much better start. They've already won a road game. They only won 10 all of last season. On home ice, they opened with a 1-0-1 record. The opening night, fantastic. That put on display everything that you're going to see from this Predators team this season. They're going to be more committed defensively. There's going to be less time spent on the offensive side of things. So scoring is going to be down a little bit, but they're playing more stable and steady hockey that's built for the season, as opposed to run and gun, get out of sorts, and just try to always be pursuing offense. They're playing defense first. They're getting fantastic goaltending from UC Soros at the start of the season. Boys, in the past, UC Soros has had kind of a track record of a slow starter. In October, his numbers are usually very depressed. And we start to wonder, like, wow, is something wrong? And then by the end of the season, he's a Vezina Trophy finalist for one of the top three goaltenders in the league. So think about a goaltender like UC Soros, who's able to usually overcome a slow start and end as one of the best in the league. Now, he's off to one of the hottest starts possible. He started the first three games of the season for the Preds. He went 2-0-1 in those games, save percentage of 94.5. That's going to come back to earth a little bit, because if he was to keep that going for the whole season, it would probably be an all-time record breaker. So those numbers will come back just a little bit. But UC Soros and the Preds at 2-1-1 through the first four is a whole lot better, Ryan, than last year when they were 0-5 through the first five. So a much better start. Jonathan Marchessault has turned his game around, a totally different person, totally willing to go into detail on that. I think that UC Soros has come out hot. The issues at this moment through just a couple of games, Stamkos still not scoring. The Preds' power play still not looking very good. But they're going to play low-scoring games. They're going to play tight checking games. They're going to be very physical. When Nick Hague makes his season debut finally for this Nashville Predators team, this might be the most physical defense core that they've ever had in their franchise history. Go to hockeyfights.com. Look at the fight card of Nick Hague. He is a big bruiser that's going to stand next to Roman Josi and make sure that no one takes a liberty with the captain of the team again. So the Preds off to an incredible start compared to where they were last year. Does this indicate they're a playoff team? Does this indicate they're going to be a success? Not yet. Not yet. But it's a whole lot better to talk about having some wins on the board and have some points in the standings after four games, as opposed to last year where we were sitting around saying, when are the Predators going to show up to play this season? So that's the summary of where we are after the first 2 weeks of the season.
Talk about the momentum, Luther.
Well, I like where we are, but here's the benchmark. Where is this team in your own division in the Central? Because the Winnipeg Jets right now, along with Dallas and the Blues and Minnesota, are going to be your top four teams that you're going to have to measure yourself up against. Where in the pecking order are you? Can you do enough to get a wild card? Or, if luck falls your way, and you still play that grinded out, hard checking, solid goaltending, pivotal goal scoring at key times, and somehow it's enough to win you the Central Division. I doubt it, but right now, the game against Utah that you had in your hands until you didn't, where you thought you had a 3-1 lead, but the goal got taken off the board, and it allowed Utah to stay in and win the game in overtime, but you picked up a point when you should have possibly had two. So Nashville's done pretty well, getting five out of a possible six through the first four. And, Charlie, About 10:45 this morning on JB and Friends, you got a text this morning about UC Eustace Onanen as Nashville's backup. Can you please reiterate what you said about Onanen being Soros' backup? And with the fans basically giving Onanen a bad rap.
Well, I was asked if I wanted to change my analysis and opinion about Eustace Onanen as the backup goaltender of this team because, quote, he stunk in his first start of the season. Well, I take umbrage with anyone saying a player stunk. Did he have the game he wanted to have?
No.
Did the Predators win with him in net?
No.
But Eustace Onanen, let's go back to when he arrived with the Predators. Scott Wedgwood was a very high-paid journeyman backup goaltender. He was not the right fit to be UC Saros' backup. Remove him from the situation, bring in Eustace Onanen. Onanen is a young, hungry prospect goaltender that is looking to make a name for himself and move up in the ranks in the next couple of years. That's one of the paths in the NHL to becoming a starting goaltender, is if you're not drafted as that team's goaltender and brought through the system, then you have to typically start as a backup somewhere, earn trust, and then get a signing and a contract somewhere else. That's where Eustace Onanen is at in his career. He's young, he's hungry. As far as his skill set, size, look, everything, he's much more like Pekka Rinne than UC Saros. He's a big frame goaltender, very positionally sound, and I think he's a very good prospect of a goaltender. Now, last night in his first start, the issue was three of the five goals, two of them were empty netters. Seven goals total. Take two of those away immediately because they're empty netters. Onanen's not on the ice for those. Take three of those away as well because three of them were touched by Predator sticks on the way into the net. It's incredibly difficult to play goal in the NHL, even when you have eyes on the puck, when one of your own teammates redirects the puck by a few inches right before it gets to you. Jonathan Marchessault put the stick out in the shooting lane, probably shouldn't have, redirects it into the top corner. Ozzie Weisblatt tries to prevent the pass from getting to the back door, ends up chipping the puck up over Onanen's shoulder. There's not a thing a goaltender can do about that. And Brady Shea, on the third of these goals, makes an incredibly play blocking a shot. But unfortunately, fellas, he blocks that shot directly back onto the stick blade of the shooter, who then shoots a second time. Now with the goaltender down and in a different position, it throws the timing of the entire playoff, and it ends up in the net. So two of them were empty netters. Three of them were off the Predator sticks. And two are on Onanen's shoulders for sure. Would I have liked to have seen him play better in his first start of the season? Sure. But he kept them in this thing, and the Predators on the second night of back-to-backs wore down a little bit after coming back and tying the game up at two apiece right there. And then Toronto just went ahead and moved ahead. Let's not forget the Maple Leafs are one of the best offensive clubs in the NHL. They're one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. And on the second night of back-to-backs where you were outshot 9-1 at the start because the Leafs had their skates under them and the Preds took a while to find their legs, you only gave up 20 more shots the remainder of the game after that point. And although there are crooked numbers and the scoreboard looks a little lopsided, I think it's a little premature to say that the backup goaltender for the Predators stinks or stunk. He just didn't have the performance. And again, I mentioned the shooting percentage for the Maple Leafs, I think, once already. It was so much higher than your average game, 25% for the game. That's otherworldly. Very few teams will shoot that high converting on shooting percentage in one individual game this season. So the Maple Leafs, who have offensive dynamos up and down the roster, they're going to break through. They were on home. They got a couple of breaks, and the Preds sticks got in the way of a couple of things on the defensive side of things. That's how you end up losing a game 7-4 to a team like the Maple Leafs. Again, I don't think Onanen stinks. I think he'll give you 15 to 20 quality starts this season. And I think as he's hungry and young, trying to work his way up to the next level for him, I think he's going to be a good asset for this team moving forward.
Now talk about the rookie, Brady Martin.
Oh, love to. Listen, boys, he's not going to be here. He's going back to juniors. I'm saying this right now because through two games played, he has one assist. If you extrapolate that out, if he plays nine games in the NHL, if he has four assists, I'll just ask you this real quick. Can you have a top line center in the NHL that only has 4 points after nine games and say that that's the course you want to take for the rest of the season, for all 82 games, that production does not extrapolate out to a number one center in the NHL.
That's more like lines 3 and 4.
Right.
Not number one.
Right.
Number one center, he's getting you, let's just say a nice round number, 20 goals, 40 assists for a 60-point season, maybe better, if he, you know, is a guy that can get you 25 to 30.
Right.
But you're, you know, asking your top-line center to get you 60 to 70, if lucky, 80. You're not asking your top-line center to get you 0 goals and 4 assists. That's more like third, fourth-line center, not top center.
And right now, the way Eric Hall is playing third-line center, Luth,
he's top
even,
line.
It's not even third-line center numbers because
nope.
Eric Hall is out the gate hot. So listen, I'll wrap this up quickly because I know you guys want to talk about some other things. Brady Martin wasn't overreach for Barry Trotz as a GM. There were other players that were potentially NHL ready, and if their numbers start to skyrocket for the Boston Bruins or anyone else, that will be brought up a number of times. Brady Martin may have been an overreach, but Barry Trotz believes that's the right player. Barry Trotz on opening night was trying to prove to the world that he was right and the rest of us were wrong by putting an 18-year-old out at center on the first line on opening night. Is it a wonderful moment? Yes. The hot lap, the exuberance, the excitement, seeing the number 5 overall pick out there on the ice at Bridgestone Arena in the lineup, it's great. That was a GM trying to prove to the world that he was right to reach for this pick, and I don't think he was. And here's the reason I say that. Luther just laid out the statistical output you want from your first line center. Ryan O'Reilly is now playing right wing. He is that center with that production level on your team already, and you're asking him to step aside for an 18-year-old with zero experience that is not going to put up that level of production. The Predators are a better team with Ryan O'Reilly as their top-line center with Philip Forsberg and Steven Stamkos.
Amen.
And then you fill in behind that, because don't forget, the other caveat to this at center, Ryan and Luther, is not just that Brady Martin is an 18-year-old rookie, but your number two center is a prospect from the AHL in Svechkov that I have high hopes for.
So do I.
But
I do
you want to traverse an 82-game schedule in the trenches of the NHL with an 18-year-old that's never played in the NHL as your top center and a prospect that has absolutely no proven numbers at the NHL level as your number two center, and then Eric Halla and Michael McCarron as the rest of your center depth? No, Ryan O'Reilly is not only one of the best centers in the NHL, he's one of the most coveted veterans in this league.
So true right there. That is so true.
And if I'm not mistaken, didn't he win a Stanley Cup somewhere, if I'm not mistaken?
St. Louis.
That's what I thought.
As the leader.
In 2019.
He's easily one of the best face-off men in the league. He knows the game. He has a hockey IQ that is above almost everyone. Look at the skill plays that he's already made this season. He is your number one
center.
He is that guy. Stop being cute. Stop trying to prove to the world that you're right and everyone else is wrong. Let Brady Martin go back to juniors. Let him get the season. If ultimately you want him to be a number one center in this league, he has to go somewhere that he can play 22 to 23 minutes a night and be a goal scorer and be on the number one power play unit for that team. That is not what he's going to be for the Predators. They already pulled him back even on opening night. He wasn't even playing in the second period. So therefore, they've already shown, yeah, it's a nice story and we want to get him out there, but we really don't trust him yet. Send him back to juniors, let him get the seasoning, bring him back here 2 years from now when he's 20 and he's ready to play a man's game in a man's position.
But
all right, we got about 5 minutes. Let's get into some SEC talk. Tennessee goes down to Alabama. What do y'all think about that? Luther?
Okay. I need to see Tennessee's quarterback show me he can win a game. I mean, I like what he's doing, but right now it feels like Tennessee's defense is getting exposed because their offense is not on the field as long as it need to be. In this type of a game against Alabama, you better bring your big boy pants and big boy pads, because I think this is going to be a rock fight Saturday night. Can Tennessee's quarterback Aguilar go throw for throw, pass for pass with Simpson? I think if Tennessee's going to win this game, their offense is going to have to be willing to carry them. Because I don't know if their defense is going to be able to stay on the field for 20, 30, 40 minutes and think they can come out of there with a win.
No, they can't.
It's impossible.
They can't. You don't go to Tuscaloosa and leave your defense on the field for 40 minutes and come out of there with a victory. No. You don't come out of there with a moral victory. You don't come out of there with
the only thing you come out of there with is you battered, bruised, and you're going to need every hot tub and ice tub known to man.
Right. I'll make this very quick. I think the trend with Joey Aguilar, and I think he's been fantastic so far in his first season in the SEC and as the Vols quarterback, he has this weird dip in his game somewhere around the middle of the second quarter to the middle of the third quarter, where for some reason, I don't know if it's his arm angle, I don't know if it's something in his accuracy, he comes out hot and he finishes hot, but somewhere in that middle portion of the game, he seems to lose momentum and lose his accuracy just enough that it seems to really hurt the Vols, and that's when other teams have pounced and exploited and gotten right back in the game. A consistent Joey Aguilar first quarter through fourth quarter, and the Vols can come away, and it would still be an upset win. The Vols come away with the win if he can go all the way through this game consistently and not have that weird 7-9 passes in the middle of the game where he just suddenly loses his touch.
I think this game's closer to what people think it's going to be. I mean, I think is the spread 3?
I thought when we last talked in the car, I think it was, what, 3.5, 4?
3.5. I think it's going to be a field goal game.
I agree with you on that.
So let's talk about Vandy LSU. We got about 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Vandy, I think this is a winnable game because this would put Brian Kelly on the hot seat, who's rumored to go to Penn State. Did you see that?
I think Brian Kelly's possibly already on the hot seat, starting the season with Nussmeier, who was supposed to be a Heisman finalist and candidate without a doubt. He doesn't look like that. LSU doesn't look like the national championship contenders that people started to surmise they were after they went to Death Valley and beat Clemson the way they did on the opening game of the season. I think that the Vanderbilt Commodores win this game. I think that Pavia understands what went wrong at the Alabama game. He uses his feet intelligently and makes a big difference against that LSU D-line, because if he can escape from that D-line just a couple of times, it will be the difference maker at the final score.
Agree, but Vandy's got to get back to being balanced, because that's what got them to that 5-0 start. When they were balanced before they tried to get a little too cute for their own good in T-Town, and two turnovers, both in the red zone, both interceptions, What has allowed Vanderbilt to be 5-0 and now 5-1? When you are offensively sound in the run game, use Pavia with QB power and his ability to find open receivers and allow your defense to get you a couple of turnovers and short fields, that's how Vandy beats LSU. And by the way, Brian Kelly's been on the hot seat ever since he's been there. So it's not the first time he's been on the hot seat, and it won't be his last.
All right, let's get to the quote of the day. Success is measured isn't measured by money or power or social rank. Success is measured by your discipline and inner peace. Mike Ditka.
Boom.
And let's get to the scripture of the day. So the Word became human and made his home among us. He was full and unfailing love and faithfulness, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's one and the only Son. John 1:14. All right, next week we're going to try to get Pete Weber on and Joe Blair with TSSAA. We're going to try to get both those guys on. We're efforting both of them. So tune in next week from 8 to 9, the same channel, AM 560, FM 95.9, and worldwide on the WNSR app and on WNSR.com. So for Luther King, Crazy Charlie, this is Ryan Mudd saying so long till next time.